This is my first time in this fashion before this court. And may it please the court and counsel, my name is David Partovi, appearing on behalf of Gerardo Loreto. Your Honors, I'm going to open up with a brief summary of my argument and then reserve however much possibly I can for rebuttal.
I don't care for that mode of proceeding. I want to hear your argument.
Okay. All right. So our argument is threefold. One is that Your Honors sent this case back on a limited remand. Second is that we have a substantively unreasonable sentence, which is sort of the thrust of where my gut is on this case, for what that's worth. And then also significantly is that it's very clear from the pleadings in this case that Mr. Loreto was sentenced to additional time for uncharged conduct. And I, unless the court has any questions, don't intend to spend much, really any time on the concept of a limited remand. I think that's clear. I think the court's fully informed.
Well, it isn't clear because your opponent disputes it, so perhaps you better tell us why you think that.
Well,
ordinarily, we have general remands, not limited remands, right?
The thrust of our argument on the limited remand is simply the language of the mandate, which I'm going to open up.
Since we vacate the 50-gram finding in the sentence and remand for resentencing.
Correct, and it also lists the statute that he's to be resentenced under. So to me, that was very specific. And that's the thrust of the argument. We you know, it says we affirm for resentencing on that statute, for resentencing under 21 United States Code, Section 841B1C. That's page 4 of the memorandum opinion.
But our case law, thinking of U.S. against Washington, but we've seen it in other places too, creates a pretty strong presumption that that there's a sentencing package, and if part of that, the sentence on one offense has to be redone, the district court gets to look at the whole thing. And it takes fairly specific language to upset that presumption. So, I guess the question is, do you really think that the reference to the statute in that sentence is sufficient to overcome the presumption?
Well, it seems like a clear indication of intent. If you disagree with me, that's certainly reasonable and rational. But it says remanded for resentencing under one statute, and so that's our position on that topic.
Okay.
What I think is more important in this case is the fact that Mr. Loreto was sentenced originally to 30 years, and once he was successful on his appeal on an issue that seemed really common sense obvious to me anyhow, and I don't mean to read intent into the court's opinion beyond what's written there, but it seems pretty clear that you can't sentence somebody to a weight and purity for drugs that don't exist. And when he went back, he was given a higher sentence.
Do you dispute, abstracting from this case just as a general matter, when someone is sentenced and then the sentence is vacated and they're resentenced, do you dispute the proposition that the district court may consider the defendant's conduct up to the second sentencing, including things that happened after the first sentencing, in deciding what an appropriate sentence is? Is that something a district court can do?
The way I would answer that, Judge, is I do not dispute that the district court can consider that conduct, but I believe that in order to punish an individual for that conduct, there should be some evidence presented that the conduct was real and attributed to that defendant. And we don't have that here. We have statements by the pre-sentence investigating officer, which without any indication of personal knowledge. So, for example, if we had maybe a declaration, I still don't think it's appropriate, but that's different than what the court can do, what I think is appropriate. But a declaration, let's say, or an indication in the pre-sentence investigation that the writer saw the video, that the writer compared the individual that they saw in the video with a photograph that they have of Mr. Loreto, because as we know, all of the pre-sentence investigation reports contain some kind of a photograph of the defendant. And that it was clear from the pre-sentence investigation report's writer that that was Mr. Loretto, that he did do these things, that it was in, you know, a prison setting, something like that. I don't believe, and there's been no allegation by the pre-sentence investigation writer that they saw the video. It seems to me from these pleadings that they were informed that he did it and that it was on video. I think that's insufficient. You know, I think that there should be some evidentiary hearing. I think he should have some ability to contest it. He should have the ability to watch the video.
Was an evidentiary hearing requested at the time of the resentencing?
Well, no. We objected to all of it, and it wasn't until the very end that it was clear to me that this was going to happen. So my recollection is we objected to the scope of the resentencing. We objected to the presentation of that additional information. But to very accurately answer that question, Your Honor, I would have to open up a few documents that I have not opened up today. Luckily, I'm at my desk and I could.
You say you objected to presenting the evidence. Hearing it at all?
It's my recollection that we did. I would have to read my sentencing submission in that case.
And here you're referring to the stabbing, not the escape attempt. I mean, the escape attempt, was there really any question that it was, I mean, it was in his cell, right?
Well, you know, the executive branch of government told us that, but I've been a lawyer a long time, Judge, and I've had the executive branch of government say a lot of things that I have affirmatively disproven. So I don't know, because I wasn't able to do an independent investigation. With that said, I will concede that the evidence was challenging for Mr. Loretto. But without the opportunity to cross-examine a law enforcement officer, I don't even know if there were five people in that cell. They said what they said. They said it in a police report, but I've read too many false statements in police reports.
But did you argue to the district court that, you know, that it wasn't, that he really had not engaged in the escape attempt? You know, that it might have been someone else, or I mean, did you raise this fact? I mean, I appreciate there could be a factual question about it, but did you present that to the court?
No, I don't think so. That's just not how the communication went. I'm looking at my sentencing document now. But I don't think on this date, no, I would have had the pre-sentence investigation report by then, and I don't remember if it included the alleged escape attempt. But, you know, these are very fluid things, and what I'm arguing now is based on what happened at the sentencing, and when I was drafting the sentencing memorandum and our objections, I don't think that was the topic that we were on. So,
was it in the pre-sentence report, though?
I don't recall if the escape attempt was. I do believe that the assault in the prison was. But again, without going through, I was prepared to just sort of discuss the pleadings and the law.
The district judge shouldn't have relied on the facts. You have to tell us why he didn't rely on the facts. And he relied on.
Well, what I'm saying is Mr. Loretto was sentenced based on hearsay in a pre-sentence investigation report. So the escape attempt is in there. It's under an
I understand it ordinarily. There's material in the pre-sentence report, and if you want to contest the facts, you have to contest the facts. And you can do that. Otherwise, they're usually taken as established.
Your sentencing memorandum, the portion entitled Objections to Pre-Sentence Report, appears at pages 6 to 7 of the SER, and I don't see any reference to either of these issues in there, so maybe it appears somewhere else.
I'm sure you're right. I mean, I opened up the document, but it's difficult to go through a 14-page document on the fly like this. My recollection is this was a contested issue at the sentencing phase. But I was not prepared to discuss those particular facts at today's hearing. I was more going to discuss the propriety of winning an appeal and then having it sent back and getting more time. I think it's substantively unreasonable. I think it smacks of retaliation.
It's somewhat connected in the sense that if he was entitled to rely on things that happened afterwards, that would be a reason for having a different, higher sentence. And if it happened, so there's a disconnect in saying that isn't what you were talking about.
Well, to me, the crux of the reasonableness of this sentence, along the lines of the Ressam case, there's differences there, of course, but were that he was successful in his appeal, and the record looks like he was punished for it, and so I consider that to be substantively.
Wasn't he in fact given a lower sentence on the precise thing that the reversal was on?
Your Honor,
I mean, it all ended up differently, but on as to the basic drug conviction, the sentence was less, considerably less.
Well, the sentence was artfully retailored.
Well, I understand that, but but as to the issue that was reversed, the sentence was considerably less.
If this court's position is that Mr. Loretto received a considerably lower sentence,
I understand overall he didn't, but on the issue that was reversed, he did.
Well, look, that's a fiction, and if that's the position, I don't have any further comment about it.
Okay, you have you're actually over time, but we'll give you a minute about it. Mr. Seal.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Benjamin Seal, appearing on behalf of the United States. I'd first like to address some of the court's comments and questions regarding the argument about the additional evidence or whether or not any additional evidence was taken at sentencing base or relating to defendants' post-sentencing conduct. And first of all, I'll say to the court, as I point out on page 9 of my brief, there was no objection to the information in the PSR relating to the BOP stabbing, and there was no objection relating to the information in the PSR regarding the escape attempt. Both the stabbing and the escape attempt are detailed in the PSR. In fact, the picture of the hole in the cell that I included in my brief on page 11, that is from the PSR itself, actually. And so all of that information was in the PSR, it was not objected to, and for that reason, we didn't have an evidentiary hearing. And as I cited in my brief, under United States versus Ameline, the district court may rely on undisputed statements in the PSR at sentencing. That's why we didn't have an evidentiary hearing on either of those, the stabbing or the escape attempt, is because no objection was made. To answer another question that the court had put to opposing counsel, yes, absolutely, the district court is entitled to rely on facts about defendant's conduct in between the first sentencing and the second sentencing. I think the Supreme Court made that clear in United States versus Wassman, that's absolutely appropriate for the district court to take into account. And our argument regarding the substantive reasonableness is if at the first sentencing, the defendant, which he did here, makes an argument to explain, I'm sorry, I acknowledge that what I did was bad. I did that because I was in a bad or dark place at the time. And that's why I made those mistakes. And he does so in a very calm demeanor to display to the court, that's not what I'm about anymore. And then we reappear in sentencing again, and he has the same calm demeanor, but that calm demeanor is belied by his conduct in between the two sentencings. Then absolutely the district court can impose a higher sentence. And that's exactly what the court did in this case, and even explained,
well,
you know.
And I do want to go back to a limited remand question in a moment, but the way he did that was not by adding in the obstruction of justice enhancement as such, right? The main thing he did, as I understand it, was make previous concurrent counts consecutive. Is that right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And how does that reflect the behavior? Is that what he said he was doing? That was the reason why he completely changed the order of things?
I think the reason why he changed the order of what was consecutive to what, I think that was based on his goal of wanting to get back to 360 months. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question, Your Honor.
Didn't he get to 396 months instead of 360 months?
Absolutely, he did. I think he followed the government's recommendation to add 3 years because of the post-sentencing conduct. But obviously, there was a lot more going on than just adding the 3 years. The court had to restructure what sentences were concurrent and which ones were consecutive in order to get back just to the original sentence of 360 months.
I haven't added up, but if you add, so there was an actual 3 months, 3 years additionally added, or it was just through this mechanism of making things consecutive that were concurrent?
No, the math was done completely differently the second time around, Your Honor, so it is a little bit difficult to follow. I acknowledge that. And so the court didn't...
It didn't add years as such.
That is correct. I don't think the court ever specifically stated, I'm giving you 3 years specifically because of the post-sentencing conduct. I don't recall the court ever saying that. I don't think he did.
Let's go back to the limited remand. Says we therefore vacate the 50-gram finding and the sentence and remand for resentencing under 20. I guess it could be somewhat more clear, but why doesn't that mean resentencing on vacating the sentencing as to the 50-gram finding and remand for resentencing on the drug issue and nothing else?
A couple of responses to that, Your Honor.
It doesn't say remand for resentencing, period. Then you would certainly be right. It doesn't say that.
Well, that's true, although in the first paragraph of the opinion, it says, we affirm in part and reverse in part and remand for resentencing, period. And so I think if the court had wanted to remand only for resentencing on just the two drug counts, I think it would have been very easy for the court to have been more clear about that. I think that the language that the court was just alluding to, where the court specifically cites to 21 U.S.C. 841b1c, that was necessary in order to make clear that the resentence drug counts was going to be with a 0 to 20 statutory maximum instead of the 10 to life at the time of the original sentencing.
The prior sentence is because the drug quantity finding fails based on insufficient evidence, the government may not retry that issue, instead must seek resentencing on the basis of possession conviction. That says exactly what you just said. That is exactly what you're saying. They already made it clear. You know, pursuant to the statutory range set forth in 21 U.S.C. 841b1c. That's pretty clear.
Yes, Your Honor. It's clear that the district court, when it resentenced on the two drug counts, had to follow the statutory range in 841b1c.
You said the reason why they put the under 21 U.S.C. 841b1c into the second sentence was to make clear what they'd already made clear in the first sentence.
Well, but in that first, in the first reference, they are quoting from a different court opinion. So I think the reference in the second sentence is to make clear that what they had just quoted from some other opinion applied in this case.
So what would it take to have a limited resentencing or death sentence?
I think if the court had said, we therefore remand for the limited purpose of resentencing on counts 4 and 5 only, that would have very clearly...
Only? Or it's the only that's missing?
I think in two different parts, Your Honor, the very last line of the opinion where it says affirmed in part, vacated in part, or remanded, if they had in that sentence said remanded for the limited purpose of resentencing only on counts 4 and 5, we leave the sentence on counts 1 through 3 undisturbed, or language like that, that would have been really clear exactly what they wanted to have done. That language isn't in there. And I also point out it's not in the first paragraph either. The last sentence of the first paragraph says, we affirm in part and reverse in part and remand for resentencing. That sounds really clear, too, that they're remanding to resentence the whole thing. And a general remand, even if we step away from the language in this particular opinion and just look at comparing this case, the facts of this case, the nature of this case with the Radmal decision that I cite in the brief, it's very similar. The court clearly bundled all these counts together, created a sentencing package, and when two of those sentences were vacated, it undid the entire bundle. And so the court was, under Radmal, entitled to resentence all of the counts to make a new sentencing package. And if the court has no other questions, I'm happy to yield the rest of my time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor. Obviously, just briefly, I think the language is clear in the other direction. We vacate the drugs and send back for resentencing under the drug statute. Moreover, the murder for hire counts were not before this court in 2017 or whenever it was finally heard. We just didn't appeal those. And so the only thing before the court was the drug counts. I will add, though, and this is where my substantive unreasonableness argument rises and falls, is that if the language had been clear in the memorandum to Mr. Seal's approval, in other words, very clear, that he was not to be sentenced on anything other than, I think what you'd see is at least a 30-year sentence, and it would be, we're going to run the statutory maximum or restructure it to be, you know, a 23-year sentence and run that consecutive. I don't know what the truth is. I know the sentencing judge. I respect him. But this one smacks of retaliation, and I think that's unreasonable.
Okay, your time is up. Thank you, Mr. Cartoni. The case of the United States versus Loretto is submitted. We will go to Lanning versus Saul.